Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop from Washington. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. Happy Monday. I hope you had a chance to watch the Democratic debate on Saturday night. I did, and I really enjoyed it. I've been commenting on the Republican debates. Republican debates, to me, are mostly amusing and terrifying. Most of the time, I'm shaking my head at the ignorance of the various Republican candidates, particularly Donald Trump, doesn't even know what the nuclear triad is, or the weirdness of people like Ted Cruz or Ben Carson, and the desperateness of someone like Jeb Bush. With the Democratic debate, I have to say, at least we have three people who clearly know their stuff backwards and forwards, and frankly, largely agree on most things, let's be fair. There are some nuances on education or on health care or on gun regulation, but they're not that big. Generally, what you'll find is that Hillary comes forward with a progressive yet practical solution that could be easily implemented politically. Maybe not easily, but could be implemented. And Bernie Sanders comes up with usually the best ideal. Look at something like single-payer health care, Medicare for all, but one that is much more difficult to implement, a more progressive goal. By the end of the day, I was impressed with both Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, a little bit less so with Martin O'Malley. Poor Governor O'Malley, he's about 5% in the polls. He's struggling to get some resonance here. If he doesn't do well in Iowa, if he's a distant third, he might just drop out. Or maybe he'll go to New Hampshire, and if he's a distant third there, he might just drop out. So he's struggling to be heard, and I think he was a little aggressive last night in ways that didn't help him any. Like during the debate when he said, hey, can I offer a different generation's perspective on this? Well, you know, I get it. Martin O'Malley's is in his 50s, I guess lower 50s, and Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders are in their upper 60s. I don't know if 15, 18, less than 20 years makes a generation. But okay, we get it. You don't have to tell us you're younger, Martin O'Malley. We can see it. Sometimes you shouldn't alert the public to things that are obvious. But I think Martin O'Malley flailed a little bit, desperately trying to make some news, and came off as a little too aggressive. I don't think it's helped his campaign. I actually saw the debate with some people from Maryland, because I live in Virginia, just across the river, and they know Martin O'Malley well, and even they said, hey, you know, that didn't sound like Martin. That didn't sound like our governor. It sounded a little more desperate, a little more flailing. So I think Martin O'Malley's a fine human being. I think he's been a good governor. I don't think he has a chance in this election, and I don't think anyone really disagrees with me on this. The main debate, the main philosophical difference, the thing I found most interesting, truly dividing the candidates, was on issues that I recognize Americans, most Americans, don't consider first priority issues. That is issues of foreign policy. That is the way to fight terrorism. That is when it is appropriate to try to overturn a dictator and when it's not. These are philosophical questions that I have grappled with personally for decades, long before this Democratic race, in trying to understand in my mind why, and I was too young for this, but why I think it would have been right to oppose the war in Vietnam, why I supported Bill Clinton's campaign against the genocide that was going on in Kosovo, why I supported the Afghanistan war, opposed the Iraq war, but did support the war in Libya. And I do support a no-fly zone in Syria. I've been making that argument now for 4 years. And if you've heard me, if you're a regular listener of the Inside Scoop, you've heard me make this argument at length from the time I brought in Syrians from Syria, who are probably dead now, talking about the brutality of Bashar al-Assad dropping barrel bombs, bombs the size of dipsy dumpsters on whole neighborhoods, residential neighborhoods, just trying to kill as many civilians as possible. And why, because of that sheer brutality, I supported no-fly zone. But it's a very important philosophical question to try to understand when to go to war and when not to go to war. Virtually everyone agrees you go to war in self-defense. You go to war when America is attacked. Okay, that one's easy. But when else do you go to war? There are some on the left and the right who will say that's the only reason to go to war. Self-defense and maybe also when your allies are attacked, right? So we're in this alliance with NATO. If one of our NATO members, the UK or France or Germany or frankly even the new ones, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, if any member of NATO from Poland to Canada is attacked, the United States will come defend them. That's not controversial. What is controversial is when do you go to war when your country isn't being attacked? And to what extent is ISIS declaring war on America? Should we treat ISIS like we treated Al-Qaeda? Virtually every American supported going to war in Afghanistan after the September 11th brutal terrorist attack that killed 3,000 innocent Americans. I was among them. Indeed, only one member of Congress voted no on going to war in Afghanistan after September 11th. But that was largely seen as self-defense. How does that differ from the war in Iraq, or for that matter, the war in Libya? And these great, hearty philosophical questions, I thought, were dealt with in a beautiful way by the three Democratic candidates. Now, the candidate I've endorsed supports the position I endorse. And that's, I guess, no surprise. I endorse a candidate with whom I most agree with, and that is Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton is the only candidate, I think, to truly explain what I see as the proper role of American force in the world. I remember when I was running for Congress last year. Many of you know I'm going to be a Virginia delegate, starting to serve, by the way, in January. So I'm going to be off the air after the New Year's until probably April of 2016. So you may miss me for a while. But those of you who are longtime listeners of The Inside Scoop know that, and some of you disagree with me, and that's fine. We liberals can disagree, that I do believe the United States has a role to play as policeman of the world. There are some on the left and on the right who say the United States shouldn't be the world's policeman. And I get that argument. You know, we have a lot of concerns at home. I support all those concerns, whether it's helping end income inequality or infrastructure, bridges and roads or schools. We have a lot of needs in America. We need to pay family medical leave. You know, we need health care for all. I could go on and on and on. But I still think we have a role to play as policemen of the world. I don't believe we should cede that role to Russia, China, or Iran, or anyone else. And so Hillary Clinton's appealed to me. I think her philosophy is my own. That doesn't mean that Bernie Sanders, and by the way, Martin O'Malley agreed with Bernie Sanders on this, that doesn't mean that this is not a viable, strong, progressive thought. It is. It may even be the majority thought among progressives. But if it is, I think the majority is wrong. Because the problem with the war in Iraq, as I see it, was not that we toppled a dictator leading to chaos afterwards. The problem is that the country of Iraq would have been more stable and fewer people would have died if we left Saddam Hussein alone. I think at the end of the day, you have to evaluate the evil that is with the evil that may be. And I recognize it's very, very, very hard to predict the future after you topple a dictator. But in the cases of Saddam Hussein, and in the case of, they gave the example of, Central American dictators or Mossadegh in Iran. Sometimes when you topple a dictator, or Vietnam for that matter, when you try to topple a dictator and the people largely support that dictator in Vietnam, or the country is relatively stable, you can do more harm than good. And that's the point that Bernie Sanders and Martin O'Malley were making. But sometimes if the dictator themselves are starting to commit genocide, as happened in Kosovo, as happened in Libya, as I believe is happening in Syria right now with Assad, when a leader turns around and doesn't just kill those that oppose his dictatorial regime, but actually turns around and starts murdering innocent people right and left, then I think we have an obligation, first of all, as humans, to intervene. I said that in Rwanda. I said that in Darfur. I say that wherever genocide occurs, the killing fields of Cambodia, for example. But also, I think it's the right realpolitik thing to do, because desperate people do desperate things. If you know that you attacking the regime, you're going to risk your life, you may be very brave and do that, or you may say, you know what, I'm not going to risk it. But once you know that just sheer survival is likely to lead to death, not even attacking the dictator, but just living is an affront. That's what genocide is, right? When a dictator just starts to kill everybody. Then I think if the rest of the world doesn't help, then that desperation morphs into something a lot like ISIS. I have long argued ISIS is not the source of our problems in the Middle East. It is the result of our problems in the Middle East. And the best way to defeat ISIS is not just to attack it. I actually don't think attacking it does much, but I do support it because ISIS is terrible. And if we can save people from ISIS, then good for us. But attacking it from the air is not the best way to defeat ISIS. It's kind of like, you know, destroying gasoline by dropping a bunch of firebombs on it. I think the best way to attack ISIS is to smother it, to deprive it of fuel. The fuel that feeds ISIS is the brutality of the dictator Assad. And what Hillary Clinton understands is by fighting Assad as well as ISIS, we defeat them both. If Assad is removed from Syria, there is no reason for ordinary, decent Syrians to turn to such crazy terrorists as ISIS. And their support will wither away. There'll just be a few crazy leaders at the top that we can top off. But if we don't go after ISIS, if we do as Martin O'Malley and Bernie Sanders wants to do and just go after ISIS and not go after Assad, then what we're doing actually is fueling the fire. We're making it worse. This actually is what I believe ISIS wants. So I want to play at length the candidates. I want you to hear their positions. And then I'll comment on them and absolutely encourage you to call in at 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Let's tell you what. Let's take a break right now. When we come back, we're going to play an exchange between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. I'm going to comment on it. And then the latter half of the hour, I want to take your calls. And if you disagree with me, I even more want to hear from you because this is a debate that's happening within the Democratic Party. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Right back after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. When to go to war is one of the great questions that any people is asked. And it's one of the things that actually defines the candidates in the Democratic primary. They agree on most things domestically. They do disagree on foreign policy. And I don't know if I'm a minority here, but I do come down on Hillary Clinton's side in foreign policy. Listen to her explain why this is in a debate Saturday night, why she thinks a no-fly zone in Syria is a good idea.
One of the reasons why I have advocated for a no-fly zone is in order to create those safe refuges within Syria to try to protect people on the ground, both from Assad's forces who are continuing to drop barrel bombs and from ISIS. And of course, it has to be deconflicted with the Russians who are also flying in that space. I'm hoping that because of the very recent announcement of the agreement at the Security Council, which embodies actually an agreement that I negotiated back in Geneva in June of 2012, we're going to get a diplomatic effort in Syria to begin to try to make a transition. A no-fly zone would prevent the outflow of refugees and give us a chance to have some safe spaces.
Secretary Clinton, I'd like to go back to that if I could. ISIS doesn't have aircraft, Al-Qaeda doesn't have aircraft, so would you shoot down a Syrian military aircraft or a Russian airplane?
I do not think it would come to that. We are already deconflicting airspace.
But isn't that a decision you should make now? Whether?
No, I don't think so. I am advocating.
If you're advocating this?
I am advocating the no-fly zone, both because I think it would help us on the ground to protect Syrians. I'm also advocating it because I think it gives us some leverage in our conversations with Russia. Now that Russia has joined us in the Security Council, has adopted an agreement that we hashed out a long day in Geneva 3 years ago, now I think we can have those conversations. The no-fly zone, I would hope, would be also shared by Russia. If they will begin to turn their military attention away from going after the adversaries of Assad toward ISIS and put the Assad future on the political and diplomatic track where it belongs.
Okay, so before Bernie Sanders breaks in, let's deconstruct what Hillary Clinton just said. First of all, I really think it's important, vitally important, that everyone understand what is happening in Syria and Iraq. If you were not following this closely, and I suspect most Americans aren't, you might think that ISIS, like Al-Qaeda, is just another brutal, extremist, Islamic terrorist group that wants a caliphate, that wants to rule the world, and just wants to kill a bunch of Westerners and behead people, and they're brutal, and they're out to get us, the United States, and we have to defeat them. That is so overly simplistic that it turns out to be mostly wrong. It's factually true, but it shows an absolute lack of understanding as to what we face here. Syria, and I've talked about this before, was a peaceful, secular country for decades, ruled by, a dictator with an iron fist, Assad. But the people there weren't particularly religious, and they certainly weren't anti-Western. To understand why ISIS has power in Syria, you've got to talk about Assad the dictator. If you try to talk about ISIS without mentioning Assad, then with all due respect, you don't know what you're talking about, or you're trying to make things seem simple in a way that you think simple people can understand. And I think that's what the Republicans do. They believe that their own supporters are stupid, and so they try to talk down to them. Here's how it happened. Assad is a Shia Muslim. That's different from a Sunni Muslim. Most of his country is Sunni. Assad was the Sunni Muslims in his country, for secular reasons, not religious reasons, tried to overthrow their dictator, and he responded by murdering first thousands, then tens of thousands, now hundreds of thousands of them, including using these things called barrel bombs that Hillary Clinton talked about, which actually are much worse than bombs dropped in a barrel, because they're actually the size of dimsty dumpsters dropped on whole villages and towns and city blocks, flattening areas, residential areas where innocent people once lived. You could see why that would make you angry if all your family is killed and you're suddenly a refugee. Meanwhile, in Iraq, the majority Sunni government of Maliki, who they voted for, has been harming the Sunni populations of Iraq, who are a substantial minority there. So the Sunnis, who are a majority in Syria and a minority in Iraq, are being killed on all sides. And the murder of the Sunnis by Assad and by Iraqi forces and is supported by Iranian forces right there on the ground and terrorist groups like the Islamic Shia group Hezbollah, all of which are supported by Russia, which wants a deep water port in Syria. It almost makes you sympathetic for ISIS. Now, I'm not, but I am sympathetic to those who want to fight this menace, who want to fight Assad in Iran and Russia. And if you don't want to fight Assad in Iran and Russia, you're never, ever, ever going to defeat ISIS. I'll explain more when we come back. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Talking about the Democratic debate on Saturday night, and I welcome your calls at 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I'll get to them in just a second. If you heard Hillary Clinton's argument for a no-fly zone, it makes a lot of sense. A no-fly zone, of course, is a zone where you say no planes can fly. None. Not Russian planes, not Syrian planes, not American planes, nobody. And if a plane flies there, we would shoot it down in combination with our allies, whether they be in Europe or Arab countries or whatever. Now, I advocated a no-fly zone in Syria 4 years ago when only 3,000 Syrians had been murdered. Today, the number is closer to 300,000. If you're worried about the millions of Syrian refugees, and you should be, and there are millions, and the country only has 22 million people, and 7 million people are refugees internally or externally, more than 2 million refugees externally. If you simply create a safe place on the ground, as Hillary Clinton points out, the refugees can stay home. Peace, Donald Trump. Don't worry. They're not coming here. They don't want to come to America, except that they're being murdered where they live. They'll stay home, the vast majority of them, and they'll be happier there. They'll have a peaceful place to live. Frankly, the anti-Assad forces were winning on the ground until they were bombarded in the air. So a no-fly zone makes lots of sense. And I should say this. President Obama also agrees with Hillary Clinton that we have to fight Assad as well as ISIS. He's just not doing it as aggressively as I think Hillary Clinton would do. He has not supported a no-fly zone the way she and I do. Now, she points out that with a no-fly zone, one of the things we would get, by the way, is more Arab buy-in. The Republicans and to some extent O'Malley and Sanders don't seem to understand, why aren't the Arabs fighting? This is their battle. Where's Saudi Arabia with all their money? Where's Qatar? You're going to hear Bernie Sanders say when I play the clip in just a few seconds. I'll tell you where they are. They're Sunni Muslims. They're fighting a Shia Muslim onslaught. The Iranian Hezbollah Assad Iraqi onslaught. They see the only people fighting this Shia onslaught is this evil terrorist group ISIS. They don't like ISIS. ISIS wants to overthrow their monarchies. But they'd rather have a Sunni Muslim terrorist group than a Shia genocidal group. That's why they're not actively taking stands against ISIS. And neither is Russia. Russia, which just joined the conflict, frankly, a no-fly zone would have been much, much easier had we imposed it 4 years ago when I first suggested it, when Hillary Clinton first suggested it, they support ISIS as well. ISIS gets the West to fight on their side. ISIS, frankly, I wouldn't be surprised if it has secret help from Assad and from the Russians. Because even though it's Sunni and Assad is Shia, ISIS gets the West to ignore the hundreds of thousands of Syrians murdered by Russia, Iran, and Assad, to focus on 14 Americans killed in San Bernardino. Brutal to be sure, but more a cause of our a result of our lax gun laws than any ISIS training. My God, the guy, you know, never even was trained by ISIS. He was just, I guess, inspired by them. So Russia loves that we're focusing on ISIS. It's the wrong thing to do. As Hillary Clinton points out, Russia agreed in 2012 to have a transition for Syria, to move Assad out. The only way there's ever going to be peace in Syria is to have the majority people in control, the Sunni population, the peaceful Sunni population, not ISIS, not the radical Islamic extremists, but the ordinary Sunni Islam population controlling their own lives without Assad and without ISIS. It's time to take a stand. I think she's absolutely right. Let's hear, though. Let's hear the other side. And no one expresses it better than Bernie Sanders. Let's hear what Bernie Sanders had to say on this question.
I want to take this to Senator. I'm going to take this to Senator Sanders next because I think the crucial.
Let me just comment. I have a difference of opinion with Secretary Clinton on this. Our differences are fairly deep on this issue. We disagreed on the war in Iraq. We both listened to the information from Bush and Cheney. I voted against the war. But I think, and I say this with due respect, that I worry too much that Secretary Clinton is too much into regime change and a little bit too aggressive without knowing what the unintended consequences might be. We could get rid of Saddam Hussein, but that destabilized the entire region. Yes, we could get rid of Gaddafi, a terrible dictator, but that created a vacuum for ISIS. Yes, we could get rid of Assad tomorrow, but that would create another political vacuum that would benefit ISIS. So I think, yeah, regime change is easy. Getting rid of dictators is easy. But before you do that, you got to think about what happens the day after. And in my view, what we need to do is put together broad coalitions to understand that we're not going to have a political vacuum filled by terrorists, that in fact we are going to move steadily and maybe slowly toward democratic societies. In terms of Assad, a terrible dictator. But I think in Syria, the primary focus now must be on destroying ISIS and working over the years to get rid of Assad. That's the secondary issue.
But Senator, that is exactly what I just said and what I just described.
Yeah, but Secretary Clinton,
and that is important because now we have a UN Security Council that will enable us to do that. And, you know, with all due respect, Senator, you voted for regime change with respect to Libya. You joined the Senate in voting to get rid of Gaddafi, and you asked that there be a Security Council validation of that with a resolution. All of these are very difficult issues.
Let's
I know that.
Right,
I've been dealing with that.
So we'll get to Hillary Clinton's retort in a second. Let's deal with Bernie Sanders' argument. So Bernie Sanders makes a lot of sense. He's a smart guy. All right. This is not a simple argument, and I don't mean to in any way suggest that my view and Hillary Clinton's view is the only view or the only logical view. Here's Bernie Sanders' point. You know, Iraq and Libya and Syria all have something in common. They all had a brutal dictator, and we overthrew two of them. We haven't overthrown Assad yet of Syria. And after that overthrow came chaos, and in that chaos, it allowed for extremist terrorist groups to occupy the void, to use the anarchy to train people, and to come out against the West. Fair point. Good point. But let's delve a little bit deeper. When he says we have to go after ISIS first, and we need a broad coalition to do that, what I don't think Bernie Sanders understands is we're never going to get a broad coalition that includes Arabs if we don't go after Assad as well. We might get England or France or Germany to join with us. I'm sure France is very upset by the murder of more than 100 citizens in Paris. But then we become the same occupying force that we were in Iraq. Either we put troops on the ground and we're an occupying force, or even if we enforce a no-fly zone, this would be seen as a war between Arabs and the West, much as Vietnam was seen as a war between Vietnamese and the West and Americans. Even though the Vietnamese were not necessarily very well treated by their North Vietnamese government, they preferred their own over foreigners. The only way we're going to get Arabs involved, Sunni Arabs, the majority of the Arab world, the people who live in and run Saudi Arabia and Jordan and Egypt and North Africa and Libya, Qatar, the only way they're going to be involved is if we are not taking sides in this old Shia-Sunni conflict that we're not going to resolve. Frankly, it was hard enough to resolve Catholic-Protestant conflicts after hundreds of years. We can't be on the Shia side, nor should we be. Frankly, ISIS is a piker compared to Iran. ISIS has killed hundreds, probably thousands of innocent people. It is a brutal, authoritarian, theocratic state. Iran and its puppet Assad has murdered hundreds of thousands of people and continues approximately at the rate of 100,000 a year. That's the same rate as the genocide in Darfur. And we intend to do nothing about that? Yes, Bernie Sanders, Assad is a terrible dictator. There's a distinction, though, between the terrible dictator of Saddam Hussein and the terrible dictator of Hafez al-Assad, and frankly, the one of Gaddafi as well. There's a difference between a terrible dictator and a genocidal dictator. There's a difference between a dictator who's just trying to stay in power and kill off all his political opponents. That's pretty bad, to be sure. But there is a measure of evil and difference between that and a genocidal dictator who's out to kill hundreds of thousands of innocent people, if not millions. See, a genocidal dictator, apart from the fact that, heck, there's major human rights concerns here, is destabilizing. Gaddafi threatened to kill every person in Tripoli. Assad is out to murder hundreds of thousands of innocent Syrians. Saddam Hussein killed about 5,000 people. That's not nice. But mostly they were political opponents of him. Even the Kurds he murdered were mostly people who were opposing his regime. Please don't get me wrong. I'm not justifying it. But I'm trying to explain the difference between overthrowing a dictator as a matter of choice and one as a matter of necessity. For all the complaints that people have about Libya today and Benghazi and Al-Qaeda or ISIS in Libya, Libya is better off than it was 5 years ago. It is better off than it would have been if Gaddafi had stayed in power. Imagine if Gaddafi had stayed in power and committed his genocide and murdered, massacred, flattened the entire 500,000 city of Benghazi. That would have been irrevocable pain. It would have been worse than killing a few people. It would have caused an entire society to rise up in any way, shape, or form they could. It would have caused almost a permanent war. Libya is not in a great place, but after a dictator comes chaos, it's often very hard to know, frankly, what's going to come next. Bernie Sanders is right about that. But when genocide is occurring, when hundreds of thousands of deaths are occurring, it is right to do something about it. One, mostly, human rights. Let's protect the people. We signed a treaty against genocide. Let's obey it. But number two, even if it's not about the people, even if it's about realpolitik, you're never going to get to any kind of peace in the Middle East, any kind of stability, after genocide. Unless there's genocide back. So I think Assad is much more like Gaddafi than he is like Saddam Hussein. I support Hillary Clinton here. Let's hear the rest of her argument.
But Senator, thank
exactly,
you.
That is exactly what I just said and what I just described.
Yeah, but Secretary Clinton.
And that
Clinton,
is important
Secretary
because
Clinton.
Now we have a UN Security Council that will enable us to do that. And, you know, with all due respect, Senator, you voted for regime change with respect to Libya. You joined the Senate in voting to get rid of Gaddafi, and you asked that there be a Security Council validation of that with a resolution. All of these are very difficult issues. I know that. I've been dealing with them for a long time. And of course, we have to continue to do what is necessary when someone like Gaddafi, a despot with American blood on his hands, is overturned. But I'll tell you what would have happened if we had not joined with our European partners and our Arab partners to assist the people in Libya, you would be looking at Syria. Now the Libyans are turning their attention to try to dislodge ISIS from its foothold and began to try to move together to have a unified nation.
Exactly. My point exactly. God, what a privilege and pleasure it would be to have a president of the United States who thinks about these things exactly the way I do. I must admit, I very much hope Hillary Clinton is our next president. Toll-free number, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I will get to your calls right after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, talking about some of the foreign policy differences among the Democratic candidates. Reggie from Georgia on line one's been holding a long time. I'm done with my rant, Reggie. What are your thoughts?
Well, I didn't watch the debates on Saturday because, well, who does outside of political geeks?
No, like me. Like me. No offense taken. I'm proud to be a political geek.
Yeah, but do you think that if she gets in, it won't be easier for her than it is for Barack Obama? You know they're going to attack her, whether she likes
it. Of course they are. Of course they're going to attack her, like they attacked Bill Clinton as well. But but she's tough. She can handle it. I'm not worried she's going to wither away.
You're not? Okay.
No. I think Hillary Clinton's very tough. I think she's got a backbone of steel. I think she's going to be a very strong president.
Well, I wish Barack Obama had that exact same kind of steel backbone.
Honestly, I agree with you. I voted for Barack Obama over Hillary Clinton in 2008. It was a really tough decision for me. And in fact, somewhere on my website, marklevinetalk.com, you can listen to me. I did a one-hour show, and I remember agonizing back and forth, because they agreed on most things. And I finally decided, well, Barack Obama's a new generation, and he would inspire a new group of people. And so that was the tiebreaker vote. I've been somewhat disappointed in Obama. I think he he has less backbone, perhaps. I think that the country wants a strong leader. And it doesn't even matter if it's a strong liberal leader. They want a strong leader. And I think President Obama tried really, really hard, and to his credit, to work with Republicans, and there was no there. There was no one to negotiate. You can't have a relationship with someone who doesn't want a relationship with you, right? No matter how much you want someone to be your girlfriend or boyfriend, it's not going to work if they don't want it. And you can't negotiate with someone who refuses to negotiate. And every time Barack Obama reached out to Republicans, they just moved the ball further down the field. And I just think she's got more fight than he does. Now, maybe because he's been president for 7 years and he's a little tired and she's still, you know, chomping at the bit. But, you know, I agree with you. Barack Obama, I mean, I think he's been relatively good president. I like a lot of what he's done domestically. On foreign policy, I've been most disappointed. And I just don't think I think he's a little too much of a compromiser, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But when the other side's the Republican Party, it kind of is.
Yeah, and when they keep refusing to compromise with you, what does that tell you about them? What exactly does that tell you about them? They don't want to compromise with you. That means, I guess, they don't like him for some strange reason. I guess they don't like him. I guess they wish he was gone out of the White House, or they couldn't get rid of him or get him out of the White House soon enough. And they'd probably be a bit more, shall we say, lenient towards Hillary Clinton, since to them, she's like more of a war hawk.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. Although, listen, these issues of foreign policy split both Democratic and Republican parties. That's one of the reasons why they're so interesting to discuss, because I know there are people on my own side who disagree with me. On the Republican side, you'll find people like Rand Paul, who are also against any kind of intervention, and certainly people like Jeb Bush, who support intervention. So there's and Donald Trump, of course, doesn't know what the heck he's talking about. There's a difference of opinion among Republicans as well on this. Look, anytime we're going to send people off to war, it's got to be carefully thought out. I mean, the problem with what George W. Bush did is it wasn't thought out at all. Iraq had nothing to do with September 11th. And he just decided to go gung-ho and get himself some oil, and it was a catastrophe. And I think that because of that catastrophe, many Americans are understandably gun-shy, war-shy. They don't want to get involved in some, horrible situation in the Middle East for which they can't escape. Quicksand, I guess, the word I was looking for. And I get that. I get that. I understand that. And yet, if our goal is to defeat ISIS, then we have to get involved and get rid of Assad. It can't be done one without the other. We could decide that 14 people in San Bernardino is not worth war over, that it's not 3,000 Americans dead on September 11th, that 30,000 Americans die every year at the hand of Americans with guns, and this particular American inspired by ISIS is frankly far less dangerous than all the other Americans with guns who, for mental health or racism or other reasons, are out to kill. That's actually not an unreasonable response. That response makes sense to me, that says, you know what? ISIS is less dangerous. We just need to regulate guns here, and we can prevent ISIS from coming here. But if we're going to intervene in the Middle East, we've got to recognize that ISIS only exists because of the vacuum. It only exists because of Assad, because of the genocide. And the worst thing in the world would be to do what I think Bernie Sanders and Martin O'Malley want to do, and I don't think they do it out of ill will, I just think they're not thinking it through, which is to aid Russia and Iran and Assad at defeating ISIS. Because if you do that, ISIS isn't going to be defeated. It's going to go deeper underground. It's going to get more powerful. This war will last for decades. The only way to find some sense there is to install a government that is representative of the people. And to do that, you got to get rid of Assad. That's my view.
Yeah, and I wish that both sides could come and work together and compromise with each other for the benefit of this whole entire planet, not just for the country, but for the entire world.
Yeah, or we could defeat them both. There are good people in Syria. The vast majority of good people, were in Syria. Unfortunately, most of them are now refugees because good people have been squeezed out in this war in the middle. But go ahead.
I was talking about. Y'all were referring to both Democratic and Republican.
Oh, okay, well, hopefully we never come to blows like Shia and Sunni radical Islam. Hey, Reggie, thanks for your call. Folks, I hope you enjoyed the show today. If you have any comments, post them on my website at marklevinetalk.com. You can also tweet me at marklevinetalk. I'll talk to you tomorrow.